Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. As Phil knows, this is like my third take to actually start the podcast, so I'm all out of sorts. I apologize, Phil. We're going to get through this.
Right, you're just like Marquette, except in previous games where you just can't start well.
I think I've just got the yips starting the show here. But Phil Bush, Joe McCann here with you once again to talk Marquette basketball. Happy holidays to all of you. Hope you all are doing well this week. Kind of a light week for Marquette. It's just one game, and that is on Tuesday. We'll talk about that game against UConn in a bit. And then it's off for the holidays, off for Christmas, and then we will reconvene after Christmas to resume more Big East play. But Phil and I will, as always, are going to dive into the week that was and see what's coming up. And Phil, just one game to talk about last week, and that was the Xavier game, which I guess probably went the way a lot of people thought it would. I think you and I were both a little more optimistic that it would go better than it did. I think you actually had it as a win, but I thought it would be close. I thought it would be closer than it was. Maybe the final score. You know, the game was a little closer than the final score might indicate, because I thought Marquette hung with Xavier for a good bit there. But in the end, you know, the better and more experienced team won, which I guess probably was not surprising to too many.
Yeah, I think the game was closer than it appeared, despite what some Xavier-based Twitter handles would have you believe. I mean, Marquette was within three with a shot to tie it with, I believe, 2 minutes to go, right? So they were, you know, they certainly weren't out of it by any stretch of the imagination. It was kind of a tale of four quarters, right? The first quarter of the game, Marquette came out gangbusters, best start of a game that Marquette's had all season. And then they kind of fell apart at the end of the second half, or at the end of the first half and the start of the second half. And then kind of fought their way back in the last 10 minutes. And then just, you know, the last minute or two, you know, they couldn't make shots on the offensive end. And Xavier pulled away a little bit. So, I mean, it's not a loss that you like or excited about. But, you know, hey, it wasn't as bad as it A, appears on paper, or B, may have felt in the moment.
Yeah, I would agree. And, I was, you know, I was like texting with you guys, you know, on our little Marquette basketball group chat that we have with, you know, Pay Touches and Anonymous Eagle and some of the other Crack Sidewalk guys. But, you know, we were just kind of saying, like, if I were a Xavier fan right now, I'd be a little nervous that we hadn't put this game away yet. It just felt like if Marquette could have taken the lead late, like, Xavier might have just kind of fallen flat and you know, it would have just been an avalanche from there. But there was just kind of like a ceiling that Marquette couldn't quite break through in those final 10 minutes to take the lead. And the experience kind of showed, and a couple good looks at the basket just rimmed out for Marquette and just didn't fall. And that's just kind of the way it goes. But like you said, you know, you never like to lose, because you want to try to get as many Big East wins as you can. So you never love starting 0-1, but in the grand scheme of things, a road game at Xavier for this team was probably a game most people had penciled in as a loss. And so I don't think it alters my hopes or expectations for what Marquette can do in the Big East. But what do you think maybe you can take away from this game, positive or negative, from the Golden Eagles?
Well, I think I'll start with maybe not an obvious positive, but it's something I mentioned before, and I think I even mentioned it on Twitter. But like, as I was really watching the game, I think the offense is working. The shots just aren't going in, right? Like, I think they're getting, you know, I guess I'm optimistic for future development in future games, because Marquette is, on the offensive end, creating shots that are good quality shots. They're simply not hitting them. I mean, how many no-footers did Omax have with 4 or 5 minutes to go, right? He probably missed two or three of those, right? But the shots were generated, didn't happen to make them, which isn't great. but that doesn't mean they were bad shots or that the offense is somehow broken. So I think I'm encouraged by the offensive progress, even though we haven't seen it translate into a win yet, per se, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense. You know, I think they're trying to make adjustments, trying to tweak the offense a little bit. They took their fair share of threes in the game, but it didn't feel like they were just like living off of it and hoping that a bunch of them would fall. We talked about Tyler Kolek a lot in the last podcast. Certainly worth mentioning. He went 2 for 5. He had his first one of the night. I mean, 2 for 5, that's 40%. You'll take that any given night. He had a tough one that kind of rimmed out there at the end that I know he really wanted that one to fall. That maybe might have been that would have made the game really close in the final minutes. But it was good to see that he was not like the mental mess we had been concerned about shooting the ball. And, you know, he's got that makeup that he will do just about anything else you need him to do to help his team win. He makes great passes. You talk about creating shots. He's a guy creating a lot of those opportunities. I think his instincts driving and dishing are really outstanding, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I think... he had a couple of bad turnovers in the first half where he was trying to make passes that, I mean, I get what he was trying to do, but yeah, it was a level too far. For a guy who's really struggled from the 3-point line and so is not getting kind of the room that you might other, you know, if somebody was in his hip pocket trying to stop him from shooting threes, he'd have more room to drive to the lane and create shots for others. But even without that, he's creating shots, for other players. He had 7 assists on the game yesterday, and he only played 22 minutes. So, you know, he's creating opportunities on the offensive end, even without contributing, you know, kind of on the point side of thing per se.
Yeah, and so you would like to see that shooting percentage continue to come up, but he's still helping Marquette win games and be competitive. So I think it was a positive game for him overall. You continue to get good showings from Greg Elliott. He had 18 points. He was also 2 of 5 from 3. 123 offensive rating for the game. He continues to emerge as a really valuable player off the bench. I think he's great in that role. And he had another strong performance. So I think the continued involvement of Greg Elliott kind of shook off that rust from not playing. And, you know, maybe, I don't know if having to sit for the first 4 games threw him off. And maybe, you know, having to earn his trust back with Shaq and the coaching staff as far as earning more minutes and getting in the rotation and hitting shots. He's earned his way back, I think. So that's another positive sign for me as we look forward to the rest of Big East plays, getting more shots for Greg Elliott, more minutes for Greg Elliott, and letting him contribute as the pretty much the number one option off the bench. And that's been a good sign.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's an example of, we've talked in the past about starter minutes, but not actually being a starter. And your point is a valid one. You know, he's been kind of the microwave off the bench, right? Like he's kind of heating things up real quick coming off the bench, and he played 29 minutes against Xavier, so he's not a starter, but he had, you know, in the Xavier game, he had the third most minutes played, right?
And only Marcel and Lewis played more,
right? And so I think he's an integral part of the offense. I think he's fine on the defensive end, but I think he's the most reliable offensive player right now, right? Justin can certainly score. Daryl can certainly score. Cam Jones, my favorite Leroy Jenkins player ever can score, right? Like, so they have opportunities, but they're not consistent. Whereas Greg, especially the last couple of games, who knows? Maybe it changes. Maybe we don't have enough data points. But Greg has seemed to be the most consistent scorer.
Certainly the last few games, right?
Correct.
Coming off the benches, he's starting to get in rhythm. Point totals the last 4 games after kind of a rough start. You know, he had 6 points against Wisconsin, 8 points against Kansas State, 22 against UCLA and 18 against Xavier. So it's steadily been going up. I don't know if you're going to get 22 or 18 more often than not, but if he can consistently get you somewhere between 10 and 15 off the bench, hitting a couple threes each game, I mean, that six-shot three-point performance, hitting 6 3-pointers in a game against UCLA, that was a heck of a performance and made that game interesting for a little bit. But, you know, if he's going to be, you know, in that 15-ish range, maybe a little less, but, you know, 10 to 15, I think that's what you hope for Greg Elliott, you know, for your sixth man off the bench, for that top guard off the bench. If that continues, that's certainly a good sign. But other than that, I don't know if I have any really other, like, you know, galaxy brain takeaways from this game other than, yeah, Marquette went on the road. They played a superior team, a team that's ranked, a team that is going to be competing for the top three in the Big East, more likely than not. They went on the road and got beat by that team, the team that has more experience than they do and maybe a little more talent. They have, Scruggs is a first-team All-Big East selection in the preseason, as was Fremantle. They've been getting good performances from some of their other guys, Jones and who was the other guy we talked about? Nunge had a good game in that game. It was an expected loss, nothing to get too broken up about, and I guess another step in the process is really all I can really add from that one, Phil. I don't know how much more I have to add from that game.
Yeah, I mean, again, it was the game went about the way you would think it went. I mean, Marquette's defense was good, not great. Its offense was good at times, but more often than not, and they were in it. I think there was some conversations on Twitter about foul disparity, I think Homer brought it up in the post game with Shaka, and Shaka's like, listen, I can't talk about the officials, but, you know, we got to find more ways to get to the line. And the only reason I bring that up is not to bellyache. I mean, whatever. Yeah. Xavier went 15 game minutes without being called for a foul. But I mean, they were probably not fouling, right? Those types of foul disparities, you know, no officials are like that obviously like leaning one way or the other. Right. But the reason I bring it up is that Marquette is not playing to get to the line. And I think that's something that Shaka and the team need to figure out, because they need to be generating more foul calls, right? Not that the officials need to call it even both ways, whatever. That's, you know, it is what it is. But Marquette needs to be generating more opportunities at the foul line, because one, you can hit your free throws. Two, it forces the other team to change their strategy. As they start to see players get into foul trouble, they need to adjust. I mean, Marquette with Tyler Kolick in foul trouble, especially in the first half, that offense, once Tyler Kolick went to the bench with his third foul, that offense, the second half of the first half, that's a terrible way to say that, but whatever, the last 10 minutes of the first half looked like garbage because Tyler Kolick was not available to play. And so Marquette needs to find ways to generate fouls and get to the line, because I think that's the biggest gap they have right now, in my opinion.
That maybe stems from a topic we've talked about quite a bit last few podcasts, is they shoot a lot of threes.
Right.
Especially for a team that does not shoot the three very well, and you're not going to be fouled all that often when you're shooting threes. You love it when it happens, but, you know, we don't have a bunch of Andrew Rouseys doing the thing here and drawing fouls shooting threes.
Right.
Jump shooting teams don't get to the line that often. You point out the free throw disparity, and yeah, you see, if you didn't watch the game and you just look at the box score, say, wow, 35 free throws to 12. That's ridiculous. But was it? I mean, I don't recall watching that game too many times, like a lot of times in that game, thinking that Marquette should have been taking free throws when they weren't, right? I don't think they were missing a ton, and, you know, maybe there were some. Maybe there were some calls on Xavier that maybe you got tired of and got too many whistles, but they were driving at the basket. And when you attack the basket, you're more likely to get those calls. And Xavier tried to get more baskets at the rim, go to the paint a little bit more. They only attempted 18 threes in the game as opposed to Marquette's 26. And that's the way you get to the free throw line more. And yeah, it's easy to say just go in there and get fouled, but if you are taking fewer threes, especially in this offense, logically, if you're not taking those threes, you're trying to get as close to the basket as possible for high percentage shots. And if you're doing that, you're either A, going to make that high percentage shot way more often than not, or you're going to get fouled doing it, then you're going to the free throw line. So maybe that is something that they can take away from this game.
Yeah, I think so. And we'll see. I mean, again, I think Shaka kind of mentioned it in the post game, and so we'll see if they find ways to be more aggressive to the bucket. I mean, that's where you would like to see somebody like Stevie Mitchell, who can drive strong. I think Daryl Morsell can drive strong, though I think he tends to shoot pull-up jumpers versus get all the way to the rim. So it'll be interesting to see how they adjust going forward, because again, they are going to need to generate more offense somewhere. And while I think the offense design is working, they're going to have to find ways to generate more high quality shots so that they can start to, outscore some teams, right? Cause they have too many droughts where they go 3, 4, 5 possessions in a row without a bucket, and you're just not going to be able to sustain winning basketball in the Big East playing that way.
For what it's worth, like, the metrics on these stats we're talking about, when you're looking at free throw rate, which is one of the four factors, so that's free throw attempts compared to field goal attempts, Marquette's is actually not bad. It's ranked 62nd in the country, so when you're talking about 350-something teams, that's not a bad number.
No.
You would love for it to be higher. But, you know, when you're saying you're in the top quarter of the country, essentially, in free throw rate, that's fine. You know, that's not bad at all. Now, three-point rate, so three-point attempts to field goal attempts, that is ranks 40th in the country. So that's probably a little high for a team that's shooting 31.8% from three. That ranks 234th in the country. So these stats we're talking about as far as getting to the line more, taking fewer threes, that's what kind of backs that up, is Marquette's three-point rate is probably a little higher than you would prefer for a team that shoots the way Marquette does. Now, if this was a team that had, you know, Marcus Howard, Andrew Rousey, and Sam Hauser, that three-point rate would probably be about what you're looking at. That's probably be about what you want, but this team is not that.
No, not even close.
So, yeah, again, the free throw rate is not terrible, but could probably do better there. Now, the free throw percentage could probably be a little better. That ranks 193rd in the country, so a little below average compared to the rest of the nation. They shoot 70% from the free throw line as a team. Again, there are 358 Division I teams, so if you are 193, that gives you a comparison for like where they are compared to the rest of the country as far as free throw percentage. So the free throw percentage could be better, 3-point percentage could be a lot better, but obviously free throws are better to make, easier to make the three pointers, and if you can get to the line a little more, if you're a team that struggles from three, maybe that's something to kind of kick around there.
Yeah,
Marquette's free throw percentage defense top 6 in the country, by the way.
Well, so, they're practicing that.
So all you fans behind the, behind the basket, waving and distracting opponents during their free throws, you're doing a great job. Elite.
Yeah, either that or we're fouling the right people.
Yeah, maybe that's more what it is. But that is the greenest number Marquette has on KenPom.
Yeah,
their free throw percentage defense.
That's a little weird, but all right. Okay.
A little weird. But we'll allow it. Moving on. So if you move on to the next game, Phil. We got just one game this week. It is Tuesday, December 21st. That is at 8 p.m. Central Time. You can catch this game on FS1. It will be at the Fiserv Forum, and we will be taking on the UConn Huskies, a team that has been off to a really good start this year. A bit of a surprising loss on Saturday, though, as they lost to Providence, although I believe they did not have Sanogo in that game.
That's correct.
So they were down a man. I think I even heard them say he is expected back in time for the Marquette game, though. So Connecticut should be back to full strength. They have lost, I think, they've lost two games since they lost him. They lost to, well, there's a common opponent there. That they lost to West Virginia, a team that Marquette defeated earlier this year.
Transitive property.
Let me just check.
Victory.
There you go. Yeah, just checking that box score. No, Sonogo did not play in that game. For what that's worth. But they lost by three on the road at West Virginia. And then, of course, they lost Saturday in their Big East opener to the Providence Friars. Close game, 57-53. Their only other loss this season was on a neutral floor to Michigan State. But still, I mean, this is... Yeah, this is one of the stronger teams in the Big East, Phil. I think some, despite the loss to Providence, I still think there are some who pick them to win the Big East. As Villanova has stumbled a bit here lately, I still think Villanova is going to be near the top when it's all said and done. I think Villanova's just had a couple bad showings against some really good teams. But the Creighton loss is a head scratcher, so I don't know what to say about that. But... other than that, all of their losses before that to were some damn good teams. I mean, they lost to, but they got blown out by Baylor, they got beat by Purdue, and then they got, they lost in overtime to UCLA. But again, we're not talking about Villanova just yet. We want to talk about Connecticut on this podcast. But what do you think about when you think about UConn, Phil, and what Marquette's going to be up against at home on Tuesday?
Well, I think they're going to be up against a strong defensive team, right? That Marquette's going to have trouble scoring against. I mean, honestly, you know, UConn's got a top 10 effective field goal percentage in the country, right? Like, and if Marquette is struggling offensively, that's not going to be great, right? That's not a strong mix. I mean, especially because, Connecticut wants to keep you out of the paint, keep you from scoring 2-point buckets and kind of force you to the arc. And, you know, it's one of those things, well, Marquette seems to want to play that way anyway, and they don't shoot well. So Marquette's offense kind of tailors into what UConn wants to do defensively. So that worries me a little bit because that UConn defense is pretty legit in my estimation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an understatement. I mean, their defense is top 25 in the country. You mentioned the effective field goal percentage defense, top 10 in the country. 2-point percentage defense, 5th in the country. Block percentage, 8th in the country. Their free throw percentage defense is also very good.
No.
Top
20
in the country. But and pretty good at forcing turnovers as well. So. They are a pretty big team. So, like, you, all those numbers I was reading off probably tells you they're pretty tough in the middle, right? Going up against, you know, we were talking a few minutes ago, you got to get to the basket and try to get fouled. Well, that's if you try to do that against UConn, that could also lead to a lot of shots being thrown right back in your face.
Right.
Because they've got, you know, Sonogo is 6'9". Tyler Polley is 6'9". Isaiah Whaley, who has been getting a lot of minutes in the absence of Sonogo, he is 6'9". A Cook, be careful how you say that one.
Mm-hmm.
He is 6'9". And Samson Johnson is 6'10". So they have a lot of size they can throw at you. A lot of guys who can really clog the paint and, again, redirect shots right back in your face if you're trying to drive to the basket. So, again, if... kind of going back what we were saying just a few minutes ago, Phil, but if you're trying to drive to the lane and trying to get to the basket here, I mean, if you can draw fouls, that's great and get those guys out of the game, but it could also lead to a lot of block shots, which could lead to runouts, which could lead to this game getting out of hand quickly. So I don't know what the answer is against UConn necessarily.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, you know, as optimistic as I was for the UConn game, I'm very much the opposite in this game, I was optimistic for the Xavier game. I'm less so for the UConn game. And again, not that I think anything has changed significantly or I'm down on Marquette overall versus, you know, after the Xavier game. I just think the matchup between UConn and Marquette is pretty lopsided in UConn's favor, right? Like, you know, UConn does all the things really well that Marquette should want to do, but isn't good at. and so it's going to be a little bit like Marquette's going to be playing, you know, left-handed versus right-handed, and they're really not used to playing left-handed, right?
Yeah.
And I can say that as a lefty.
Yeah, that's right. You rep the lefties. You know, we've said a few times over the last few weeks about, you know, trying to get some wins in December, and it was going to be a really tough month. But the page starts to turn here as you look over the next, say, seven games. You know, including this one, I mean, there are a lot of opportunities to get some nice wins for Marquette because they're home quite a bit over the next seven games. Excuse me, what, five out of the next seven are at home?
I believe so, yes.
So, yeah, so five of the next seven are at home, and the road games probably, you know, they could be winnable. One of them's at Georgetown. You think that's a winnable road game. And at St. John's, you know, Marquette will be an underdog in that one, but probably not a heavy underdog, maybe just a couple of points. So I'm not saying they can win them all, but I'm saying there should be some really tight games over the next month, you know, 5 to 6 weeks, where if Marquette could be on the plus side more often than not and maybe get 4 out of 7, 5 out of 7, things get interesting when you're talking about a tournament resume.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and this is where it's like, hey, you know, if we go on a three-game losing streak here, if we lose to UConn, yeah, you lost to three top 25 or near top 25 teams. You know, that's a tough road to hoe, and you were competitive in, you know, again, I know the scores don't always reflect it, but, you know, UCLA was a really bad start, but they came roaring back, and, you know, if that game's 5 minutes longer, who knows? Maybe Marquette can make it a game. The Xavier game, you know, we're in it with 2 minutes to go. We'll see how the UConn game goes. You know, again, playing at Marquette, that I think bodes well. The atmosphere has been really good at the Fiserv. So, you know, UConn coming off that Providence loss and on the road, maybe we're catching them at the right time. But it's also one of those, hey, you know, we see what we get out of UConn, kind of hit reset, week off, come out of Christmas, and see if you can't go on a 4 or 5 game winning streak, right? The schedule, and you're going to kind of have to because the end of January, beginning of February is kind of brutal. But the schedule lines up that you can kind of go on a bit of a tear here if you maintain your confidence and just try and win the games that you got.
Yeah, because once you get to mid to late January, Marquette is expected to lose, according to KenPom, a lot of games.
Yes.
So if you're going to do some damage, now's the opportunity. Not necessarily saying you have to beat UConn to be a part of that, but the window is open to get some wins here. You know, you mentioned being a home game, Phil. I'm actually kind of curious what kind of crowd will be there on Tuesday night, because I can talk myself into both ways. That, like, on one hand, yeah. Like, on the negative side, okay, it is a Tuesday night. It's an 8 p.m. game. I'm guessing it's cold in Milwaukee. But you know, maybe raising COVID concerns, and the students are mostly home now. So those are all probably in the negative favor. But on the plus side, it's a marquee opponent. It's not like it's a school night for most folks. Many, I'm sure, are probably begun their Christmas vacation, so it's not like maybe quite as many people have to get up and go to work the next day or take kids to school the next day. So I could see some reasons why it might be better than normal, but I could also see a lot of reasons why it might be a little quieter than you would hope for a game against UConn. What's your kind of gut feeling? What kind of crowd we may be looking at Tuesday?
Yeah, I think the weather's going to be, you know, not to be, you know, weird nerdy, but the weather's going to be favorable for it, right? Like, no snow, it's going to be 30s, right? So there's no holding back there. I think there's lots of folks that would be able to go the game. I think the only unknown. So I guess I would say, normal times, I think this is a pretty packed game because it is right before break or what have you, right? At worst case, there's school for one more day the next day, and nobody cares about the last day before Christmas break. So, yeah, but I think the question is going to be the COVID thing. Not that we need to bring this podcast down with talking about things that we know nothing about, but, yeah. You know. That'll be interesting.
Hasn't stopped us before.
Right. That's true. Right. We're not qualified to talk about anything on this podcast. So, you know, full speed ahead.
Yeah, I really don't want to get into a big COVID discussion.
Oh, absolutely.
I hope I just hope this surge comes and goes, and there's not any kind of significant raise in hospitalizations or deaths, and we can just get past this and get through this season. But yeah, I'm not concerned as far as health and death wise for the country with this thing, but I am maybe concerned about how it may just affect day to day life and restrictions, and if travel and, you know, again, people being able to go to work and go to school and things like that.
Yeah, it just depends on how people react to it, right? Like to the news, right? And so that's what I think will have an impact on the crowd. I suspect it'll still be pretty full. I think there's some, you know, pent up need to get out and do things, and you know, it's a good opportunity to do that. It's again another name coming in. So I think there'll be an enthusiastic crowd, but we'll have to wait and see for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the better opponents coming to the Fiserv this season. I mean, UCLA was probably the best one. But, you know, you still got Villanova and Seton Hall coming later this season. But, you know, if you want to see a marquee opponent at the Fiserv, this is one of those opportunities.
Right.
It's not like you got a ranked team coming in there every single night. So, if you're able to go, if you're comfortable going, the team would love to have you there. So
get out and go.
It's a nice, yeah, get out there, and especially if you're vaxxed and boosted, go out in there and enjoy yourself. That's, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. Seems like a good thing to do. Keys to beating Connecticut, Phil. What, you know, aside from the obvious shoot well, don't turn it over, and score more points than they do, what do you see as maybe kind of a tipping point in a game against Connecticut if Marquette's going to pull off a win in this one?
I mean, honestly, I think they need to attack the shot blockers, right? Like, they need to generate points in the paint. And get, you know, obligatory paint touches reference. But I mean, they've got to get inside and score points that way. They are not, you know, I think they're getting some 3-point shots is obviously, that's always going to be required, but relying on the 3-point shot is not how this is going to work. They are going to have to get inside, get points at the rim, and then generate kickouts and other opportunities from there. And again, they're going to have to challenge the shot blockers, right? They need to generate fouls attacking the rim. Otherwise, they're just going to kind of be sharpshooting, and that is not Marquette's strength.
Right. And yeah, and if you can get them out of their rhythm and maybe get some of those big guys on the bench and maybe get a few easy buckets. It's a lot easier, way easier said than done, but it may make you uncomfortable, but sometimes doing that uncomfortable thing might be the right thing to get you going. And I think getting those tough, and like you said, there are guys on this team who even some of the smaller guys who are comfortable among the trees there and making good decisions. I think, you know, Kolick, he's not a guy who's necessarily going to go up there and draw contact and get a layup, but I think Kolick is definitely a guy who can get into the paint and then dish it to somebody else for an open look, whether it's kicking it out for a three or just dumping it off to one of the big guys for a layup or a dunk. I think he does that pretty well. And if Kolick can cause a little chaos in the paint with his driving and dishing, I think that would be a good thing in this game. Morcell is confident posting up and getting into the paint. He's confident in his mid-range, and I got no issue with that. That would probably be a helpful weapon in this game. Maybe not as much the mid-range, which I know it's not necessarily great for analytics, but Morcell's pretty good with it. But maybe not so much the mid-range, but posting up and getting as close to the rim as possible for a high percentage shot. I think that's something Morcell can do in this game. So I think the play of Kolick and Morcell and what they can do paint touches-wise in this game could be a tipping point. And if you're going to pull off a win against a good team, you need a place like that to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Let's see. The take my money in the last game. I was mostly off Twitter this week, last few days, just trying to avoid spoilers for Spider-Man. Right. So I wasn't out there tweeting a whole lot. I have like unmuted several words now on Twitter because I muted like Spider-Man, both hyphenated and not, Peter Parker and all kinds of words because I didn't want to know what happened in the movie. But anyway, that's why I really wasn't tweeting along during the Xavier game. But I think the one we set last week was turnover percentage, and it didn't come close to
hitting. No, not even close. They were at their season low for turnovers.
Yeah, so nowhere near. So that I think that moves us to 4-8 on the season.
Correct.
On Take My Money. So for the Connecticut game, we've talked a lot tonight, Phil, about I say tonight because we're recording this Sunday night, but you guys probably listen to it on Monday at some point. We talked a lot about that, you know, getting into the paint and getting to the free throw line. So I'm considering that's kind of been a theme of the podcast today. I kind of want to go in that direction. Either I don't know if I want to go free throw rate or 2-point percentage. Those are kind of two stats I'm looking at. Because you know, maybe you don't need to have a super high 2-point percentage if you're creating elsewhere, but that would be good. What kind of strikes you as maybe a stat to keep an eye on to track in this Connecticut game?
I really think it's going to have to be free throw rate because I mean, or because the you know, there UConn does have a lot of shot blockers and you know, and so there's going to be some struggle at the rim. So I don't know that it's necessarily fair to expect, you know, a 2-point percentage that's at or above where they've been, but I think the free throw rate. I don't know what number you would set it to.
It's like so, like the number like for Marquette on offense and Connecticut on defense are very similar.
Right.
It's Marquette's free throw rate as an offense is 34.9%, and Connecticut allows 34.5%, which actually is not a great number. That's one of their few red numbers on KenPom. It ranks 274th in the country. So I guess teams do drive at those bigs a lot to try to get them in foul trouble. I think the problem is Connecticut has a bunch of them, and they can keep throwing them out there. So maybe if you just go a tick up from that on both sides, you get you to 35%.
Yeah.
Free throw rate for the game. Is that a stat we can easily keep track of on KenPom, by the way? Because, you know, one thing I don't want to do is math.
We can. I mean, I can. We can easily do that.
We'll figure out the math. So let's set it as a 35% free throw rate for the game for Marquette. Get to the free throw line, knock down some free throws. I know a popular phrase is free throws don't matter, but sometimes they do, especially if you hit them.
Yes.
So it is the least important, of course, of the four factors on KenPom, but it is still one of the four factors. The most important, of course, is effective field goal percentage. But again, we're just trying to keep it fun.
Right.
You feel weird rooting for free throws. Who wants to do that?
I don't know. This is where we're at, but you know, it's fun to get weird a little bit every once in a while.
Yeah, it's the holidays. It's a good time to get weird.
Yeah, so. Let's get weird.
Got any fun Christmas plans, Phil?
No, just kind of getting out and seeing the various and sundry families. My brother-in-law and two kids is in from Portland for the first time in like 2 years, so that'll be good to see them and you know, and kind of just live in the holiday spirit. How about yourself?
Just gonna visit my folks in Georgia for a couple days for Christmas, and had a little early Christmas with my brother and his family. Just got to give some things to my niece and nephew, so spoil them a little bit. And I gave my nephew, who is just, he's like 15 months old, I gave him like a little baby Grogu doll. So
oh,
got him
nice.
A little baby Yoda doll. So, trying to get him on the right path to being a Star Wars fan.
Perfect.
So he was kind of lukewarm about it, but it is cute. So
yeah. Well, we bought, go ahead.
No, and then I think on sometime this week I have to get in my annual viewing of Christmas Vacation. I have to get that done.
Oh yeah, don't let that go. I've already watched it twice, so
yeah,
it holds up. I'll tell you that much.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say we bought a basketball hoop and a Marquette basketball for the oldest boy. So that's going to be the
excellent.
That's going to be the big item and. Unfortunately, the big red guy gets to claim credit for it, but that's okay, you know.
Yeah, well, that stinks.
Yeah, you live a little, you learn a little.
Yeah, but you know, the more I watch Christmas Vacation, though, you know, like I'll always say, you know, what's your favorite Christmas movie? I'll always say Christmas Vacation. But the more I watch it, it's not just my favorite, like my go-to Christmas movie. I would say it is a top five all-time comedy. Period.
Ooh. I don't know.
Like for me, like if it, you know, if you ask me my favorite comedies in like July, I would not bring up Christmas Vacation just because it's not in my mind because I'm not thinking of Christmas movies. But like, it checks like every box for me as far as what makes a great comedy. It's totally rewatchable, holds up, endlessly quotable, great cast. The plot is just good enough that it doesn't take away from the comedy. It's like, it's just such an outstanding comedy. And so I think it is probably one of my top five all-time comedies, period. And so that's why I have to watch it every year.
I do enjoy it. I do love it. And I do think, like, in a weird way, it's a shame that it's a Christmas movie, right? Because that, you know, you're not going to watch. Though I think it came out in the summer, if I'm not terribly crazy.
It actually did. I think it actually did come out like in a summer movie. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but you know, so it is hysterical. I don't know that I'd put it in the top five, but I'm not mad that you did. I just, that's not a choice I would make. But understood. Yeah, it's an extremely good movie.
Yeah, like in the, you know, I don't, people ask my top five comedies, I go to my go tos. Like, you know, Dumb and Dumber is an all timer for me. The Hangover is just incredibly hilarious. Not sure what else I'd have to think.
I would put Caddyshack, Hangover.
Yeah, Caddyshack's really good.
I'd probably put Stripes in there. I love Stripes. Mm. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I'd put that in there. Probably Wedding Crashers. Wedding Crashers is like incredibly rewatchable.
It is. One thing that separates like Wedding Crashers and Christmas Vacation for me, because Wedding Crashers has that like big lull when it tries to get like really sweet and emotional at the wedding. Like Christmas Vacation doesn't have like a moment like that where it gets like really sweet and like tender and like try to like have some kind of moral to it. Like, let's just be funny from start to finish. And so that's what puts Christmas Vacation maybe a notch above Wedding Crashers for me. But I mean, for the next, you know, for most of the month of December and probably for the next week or so, you know, there are just lines that just come out of my mouth because they're things that happen that remind me of Christmas Vacation. Like, the blessing.
Like, seriously, one of the most under, and it's not even a line, but it makes me crack up every time. The physical comedy part is when the SWAT team busts in at the end after they've kidnapped the boss, who was, by the way, played by one of the Bill Murray brothers. Murray brothers, yes. I should say. Anyway, when he busts in and what's the wife's name? Chevy Chase's wife in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, the actress is Beverly D'Angelo.
Yeah. Beverly D'Angelo is cupping his groin, like, because they're all frozen as they've got the guns pointed at him. And then the guy goes to shake her hand, and she's like, "Pleased to meet you." Takes it off, it shakes the hand, and then puts it back. And I'm like, I don't know how they stood there for like hours filming this scene with that going on. It kills me every time.
Like Chevy Chase is like, great, you know, it has to be uncomfortable because everyone's in there watching,
right?
Like, this woman's got her hand right on your crotch, and it took me a while to actually notice that was happening, like,
right?
You know, maybe like the first few times I saw it when I was younger, I didn't exactly notice that, but I definitely do notice it now, and it is, I do laugh every time because that is like one of the low key comedy moments. And of course the movie has a very young Julia Louis-Dreyfus in it.
Correct.
Which, that's another one of those, you know, things that are always quotable. The "why is the carpet all wet, Todd?" I don't know. I don't know, Margot. Just again, endlessly quotable. And yeah, like another one, like just a friend of mine was like putting up Christmas lights, and I just love, like, you know, in the movie when Clark gets the things lit, and he's like going down the line and, you know, saying something to everybody, and then to the father-in-law, and he's like, "The little lights are not twinkling." "I know that, Ed. Thanks for noticing."
Well, the other reason that should make it your favorite, to bring it back to Marquette a little bit, is you used Christmas Vacation as a gif last year when Marquette beat Wisconsin. That was epic.
Yeah, I was proud of that one. I was proud of that one. I was sad I was not able to use it. You know, I'll keep it in the can because I'm sure there'll be another opportunity to use a Christmas vacation meme after a future Marquette victory over Wisconsin or somebody else, but I probably won't put much effort into it if it's over somebody else. But yes, love Christmas Vacation. If you haven't seen it, shame on you. Give it a shot. I can't see you not laughing.
Yeah, well, welcome to Scrambled Eggs, now converted into the Christmas Vacation podcast. We hope you've enjoyed your time.
But yeah, that is our show for today. So thanks for checking in. Hit us up on Twitter. I am Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com, post the podcast there. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page where the podcasts are posted as well. Phil, Merry Christmas to you and yours, and we will chat with you right after the holiday. We'll probably get one up to probably not the Monday after Christmas, probably the Tuesday after Christmas it will be up to you again. But happy holidays to you, Phil.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you and all your family, Joe, and to all the listeners. Hope you have a blessed holiday and enjoy yourselves this week.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Seashells and balloons.